Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, this is me and all my homies love native manu, and this week, E Te Whanau, we are talking about the weka. And here to talk with me, as always, about our manu is the Birdman, Pete Tonder. Welcome back, Pete.
Oh, morena, Liv. Good to be here on this wet day.
On this wet day, yes. We're talking about the weka this week, guys. Can you give us a classification of this manu, Pete?
For sure. The weka, the endemic, so only found here. The flightless, rail, and there's four subspecies. So we've got the North Island weka, which is relict, which means there's just bugger all of them left, except in some places.
Okay.
Western weka, which is mostly South Island based, that's not threatened. The buff weka, which they do have feathers, that's relict as well. It was on the eastern side of the South Island, but it's now only on the Chathams and a few islands. So there's not many of them where they used to be.
Okay.
And there's the Stewart Island weka, which is nationally vulnerable.
Okay.
So once widespread, like all, you know, native endemic manu, but they struggle being a flightless bird, subject to predator attack. They're doing okay in some areas, but not so good in the North Island, except around, they got introduced to the Russell Peninsula up north.
Mm.
They're doing okay there because there's a fair bit of predator control work. Some of the offshore islands like Koho, Kapiti and Olva, and they're on the Chathams. They were introduced to the Chathams.
Okay, yep.
And, you know, there's about 60,000 of them out there, which is pretty good.
That is good. That's great.
They are in the Eastern Bay of Plenty, but the numbers go up and down there. South Island, they're pretty good around Nelson, probably due to lots of predator control work in that region, and also present in Fiordland, and there's some on Rakiura and the Te Te Islands.
Of course.
Yeah, so they're fully protected, except in the Chathams, where they weren't originally in the Chathams, but there were 12 buff weka released there.
Okay.
And they're up to 60,000, and you can harvest them for food.
Oh,
and
awesome.
You can also harvest them on the Te Te Islands for food.
Yes. And they've originated from a volant.
Volant rail. Banded rail ancestor.
It's a good word, volant.
I really like that. It just basically means flying.
And the irony is they can't fly.
No. But that's the story of a number of flightless manu.
Yeah, of course.
And it would be good to be volant, spiritually and emotionally, if not physically.
Not physically. You don't want to be volant.
I would like to be, but I can see some anatomical challenges.
Yes, you are quite a big. You are quite a big guy, aren't you?
Yeah.
So for tangata whenua relationship to the weka, they were a major food source, often preserved in their own fat and stored in poha kelp bags.
Mm.
Their fat was used to treat inflammation and feathers, like many of our manu, used for korowai.
Yeah.
The traditional harvest was known as weka pama moa. Ooh, I like that.
Mm.
What does that kind of talk to, Pete?
I'm not sure, but it was quite a sustainable sort of practice, like they did with a number of the manu.
Cool.
They knew when to harvest and how much to harvest. So, that was good practice.
Aye, marika. And whakatauki for this wiki, ka motu te weka I te māhanga e kore a muri e hokia. Ooh, what does that mean, Pete?
When the weka breaks from a snare, it won't be back. And it just talks about that sort of once bitten, twice shy learning. And the weka are very clever and quick learners. So, you know, if they get sort of almost caught in a trap, they'll think, nah, not for me, I'm not going back.
Exactly.
And they'll recognise other traps and avoid them. So yep. Smart manu.
Very smart. And you put a note here.
Yeah.
How to cook a weka.
Yeah.
Let's
get into that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a common saying that the best way to cook a weka is to boil it in a pot with a stone for 4 hours, then throw away the weka and eat the stone. And it's based on reports that the flesh is really tough, but it does depend on how you cook it.
Yes.
So it can be tender, and the meat is tasty. It's sort of a gamey chicken mutton flavour.
Aye.
And I've actually tasted it.
Have you?
Yes. The Chatham Island weka.
You liked it?
Yeah, it was quite nice. It was quite tasty. A scientist guy, he goes from Doc, he goes across there doing lots of work, and because they can harvest them there as food, he brought one back and let us have a little sort of nibble on it.
That's awesome. Good. Wow, what a special experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already given us a really great kind of description of the bird beak, but in your personal terms, how would you describe this manu?
The weka is the Fred Dagg of the manu world. Quintessentially Kiwi and often mistaken for Kiwi.
Yeah, definitely.
Very funny, rapscallion rogues, clever and habitual thieves.
I love that word, rapscallion.
So do I.
Yeah, it's a really good description for the weka. Yeah.
So they're quite large manu, 46 to 60 centimetres long. The males are a bit bigger than the females. They weigh between 350 grams and 1,600 grams.
Well, that's quite a big weight
fluctuation. Yeah, I think some of that's the difference in weight between male and female too.
Yeah.
Range in colour from a sort of a grey to brown to sort of dark brown, almost black.
Mm.
Red eyes, strong pointed bill and strong legs that are sort of brown but often a sort of a pinkish red.
So, often confused with the kiwi, but I think the main kind of defining feature is that it's got a shorter beak.
Yeah, and their feathers are different.
And they're just
They move around a bit like a kiwi from a distance. You'd mistake them for one.
Exactly. And like the takahe, they poo a lot.
They do. About their body weight per day.
You know what? That's a feeling I'm chasing. Being able to poo my body weight each day.
Well, that would be, I guess it would have some therapeutic qualities to it. I think we should move on.
Okay.
Right.
Wait, what is, okay, you've talked about the weka in Nelson.
Yes.
You made a special point about this.
Why is that? In Nelson they're doing really well. There's a lot of them, but because of, you know, their nature, some people are getting a little bit grumpy, reporting that cat dishes are being raided, veggie gardens are being scratched up, goldfish are being eaten.
Oh my gosh.
And eggs are being stolen along with untethered shiny objects like watches, car keys, jewellery and spoons.
Oh, they're collecting.
They're characters, aren't
they? Yeah. Yeah.
But the expert advice is if you see a weka steal something, don't chase it. Like if it's got hold of your watch or something, don't chase it because it'll just keep running.
Yeah.
But if you just stop and observe where they'll go, they'll kind of dash into a covered area. They'll stop and say, "Oh, look at my treasure," and have a good look at it, and then they lose interest and they'll wander off. So you can go and retrieve your goods.
So it's
often.
It's not really that big of a deal.
No. And you had a weka encounter.
Yeah, I did. Me and my mum were just above Karamea on the west coast of Te Waipānamu. We were doing a day walk on the Hefe track. And we'd just done our walk. We sat down to have a kai. We got some cheese and tomato and some bread. And, you know, we're having our sandwich. And then we'd put the bag of bread just on the ground. And then we hear this rustling, and Mum's like, "What's that?" And we turn around, and this weka has grabbed our whole bag of bread, and it's just running away with it. I was like, "No, you don't!" So I did the wrong thing. I actually chased the bird because I was like, "I want a freaking sandwich. I want another sandwich. I'm hungry." Also, I was like, the plastic's probably not that good. So, but we did get that bit. He kind of just dropped it.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, it's not worth it.
He saw Liv coming at the wicket, you know, 100 miles an hour, thinking, yeah.
He was like, oh, no, listen.
Those aren't good odds for me. I'm out of here.
But they are foodies.
Yeah,
and they
absolutely
eat a variety of things. What do they like to eat?
Pigs? Insects, slugs, lizards, rodents, food scraps, carrion, eggs, chicks, frogs. But they also eat fruit, leaves, berries and seeds.
Wow.
And they can forage on the rocky coastlines for sort of chitons, which are like little mollusks or limpets.
Yep.
And other marine insects. So they're pretty adaptable, you know. They forage widely, which makes them, you know, quite resilient in terms of getting food.
Absolutely, because you've got a lot of coastal food there, but then also forest and, yeah, wow.
Opportunists.
Definitely. And can you talk to their breeding patterns?
Yeah, monogamous, lifelong pairs.
I feel like lots of the birds we've been talking about recently have been monogamous.
Yeah, they do. Although I read something about if the food supply's really high, they can play around.
They can be polyamorous.
Yes. And I don't know why that is.
Because they've got more energy.
Probably. But
more energy
that
to be...
just sounds...
Oh my
interesting
God, that's so
that they're
funny.
Really loyal, and then there's lots of food, and it just goes to their brain, and they think, "Oh, I'll just try the field a bit,
see what's out there." Oh my God, I love that so much.
Yeah. So they can nest all year round if the food's abundant.
Yes.
So they can have up to 4 broods,
mm-hmm.
but they usually lay about 2 to 4 eggs between August and January.
Mm-hmm.
But that population fluctuates. And so in Bay of Plenty, the population goes up and down a lot. And when there's not much food around, they can get into quite low numbers.
Mm.
And then they start to have trouble with genetic diversity and all sort and resilience. So, you know, somehow got to try and keep their populations at healthy levels.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that, it can be hard when they're flightless birds and they're very... an easy target for our introduced mammalian predators, such as, you know, ferrets, stoats, cats and dogs.
Those are the main threats. But they are predatory birds, so they can kill rats and mice, which is good.
Okay, they're doing the predator-free work.
Yeah. But introduced deer, pigs and possums, they do compete with their food sources.
Yep.
And they're quite vulnerable to snail and slug baits and rat baits because you leave those around in your gardens and the wicker comes around and hoovers them up and then, you know, dies. And they're inquisitive, so they can get caught in traps.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we need to design some wicker-proof snail and slug bait stations.
Yeah.
And wicker-proof trapping.
True. There's some solutions in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, as you mentioned, Pete, they are a predatory bird, which does create a bit of a conundrum for our conservation efforts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So a lot of conservation projects like predator-free islands, they don't want the wicker because they are predatory and, you know, they spend all that time sort of nurturing Tonga native species that are endangered and on the brink, and then the wicker comes along and sort of hoovers them up. So you might have some rare endangered seabird and, you know, you just got some eggs and little chicks and then in comes the wicker. For many of those offshore predator-free islands, they just don't want the wicker at all.
Interesting.
But they are on a few islands, like they've been on Ko'o Island for a long time.
Kapiti,
Olva. And recently introduced on Rotoroa Island on the Hauraki Gulf, which has become predator-free with a huge investment.
Shout out.
But so they just got to have careful consideration. Where do we need to retain them. They're such an awesome, charismatic manu.
Yep.
But we can't sort of put them everywhere.
It's got to be carefully considered.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah. But they are fantastic birds, and there's a lot of children's books about them, and there's a lot of cool wild tales about their mayhem and mischief.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to celebrate them.
Yeah, love to the Weka.
Absolutely.
And you've picked a song to finish off.
Yeah, got to be Fred Dagg's sort of gumboot song. Reflects the vibe of this manu, crazy manu.
It does.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pete, for coming in.
All right.
This is the gumboot song by Fred Dagg. You can always tell when one of the trips is taking off his gumboots. If it weren't for your gumboots, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary. Then you would have a dose of the flu, or even where is he? If you didn't have your feet in your gumboots. Now there's rugby boots and racing boots and boots for drinking rum. But the only boots I'm never without are the ones that start with gum. Oh! I've got short ones and long ones and some that reach me belt. I'm never dressed till I've got on me gum boots. If it weren't for your gum boots, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary. Cause you would have a dose of the flu or even pharmacy if you didn't have your feet in your gum boots. Da 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 da. Now Rob Muldoon and Rowling, they haven't made a hit. They're ruining the country more than just a bit. And if they keep on the way they're going, we'll all be interred. So you'd better get your feet up your gumboots. If it weren't for your gumboots, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary. Cause you would have a dozen of flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your gumboots. If it weren't for your gumboots, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary. You would have a dozen of flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your gumboots.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.